Might be good to have Mark chapter 5 open in front of you. It's page 1007 if you are using the church Bible. I wonder how you get on with your neighbours. If you're like one in seven of the British public, you actually don't get on with them at all. Because that is the proportion of people who have actually reported incidents of noisy neighbours, not to mention the many others who have feuds over parking, building schemes, boundary lines, or a current favourite, this one, overgrown hedges. Just to give you an idea, if you type high hedges complaints into Google, you will bring up 232,000 UK sites alone. At least one in four people have considered moving to escape their neighbours. And speaking personally, we have had problems with at least four sets of neighbours since we moved into our house 16 years ago. I'll leave you to guess who was at fault in each case. Oh, by the way, if you are moving to Headley Park, don't worry, they have either all left or resolved the disputes, more or less. In fact, the problem of really difficult neighbours is so great that even the government is taking action on it. In the Queen's speech just a couple of weeks ago, it was announced that a new bill would be introduced to give the police more powers to close down premises used for drunken parties, raves, brothels, or antisocial activities. Seems to cover all the rest. And the whole issue has so gripped the public imagination that the concept of neighbours from hell has inspired several TV series and most recently a popular game called Neighbours from Hell, which is available in both PC and Xbox formats. In this game, which is suitable for all ages, you play a character called Woody, who has a highly irritating neighbour called Mr. Rottweiler. Woody has endured endless troubles at Mr. Rottweiler's hands, and now it is his turn to get even. So your task as Woody is to set up an endless series of practical jokes in your neighbour's house. And as you move up from one game level to the next, the prank sequences have to become more and more elaborate and painful. Of course, if Mr. Rottweiler catches you, you will discover exactly why he is known as a neighbour from hell. It's not much fun living next to a neighbour from hell, as you may even have experienced. And people respond to the problem in all kinds of different ways. There are various online forums to help the victims. There are the police, if you can get hold of them. And ultimately, there are the courts. You can form a vigilante group to drive the offenders out. You can move away, or you can simply suffer in silence. And some, though not all, of these remedies were attempted by the inhabitants of the region of the Gerasenes, just next to the Sea of Galilee, around 30 AD. Unfortunately, none of them worked. The offender in this case was the original neighbour from hell. In fact, in his case, that is the perfect description. This man, Legion, as he is known, certainly will not listen to reason or obey a restraining order. He will not turn the noise down. The only option for the locals in his case is the vigilante solution. Until they meet the man who has the power to restore. Last week in Mark's Gospel, we saw how Jesus finishes his long drawn out teaching session and decides to cross over the lake to the other side. It all seems routine enough as he and his disciples set off in the boat that evening. But before they've gone far, a violent storm sweeps down on the lake, and very soon the boat is sinking and the disciples are busy panicking. Meanwhile, Jesus somehow is fast asleep in the back of the boat until the disciples wake him up and demand that he does something about the fact that, as they see it, they are all about to die. Jesus very calmly gets up and tells the winds and waves to shut up, and immediately they do. The storm is stilled and all is calm. And the disciples recognize that this man, whom they thought they were getting to know so well, is in fact something even more than they have realized. They begin to see that this man who can bring peace out of the chaos of the waves, who can still the chaotic violence of the sea, is none other than God himself, the God who brought order out of chaos when he created the universe. And ever since then, he's been providing peace for his people in the midst of a chaotic world. Remember, chaos doesn't just mean randomness, doesn't mean mess. It means the violent, tumultuous disorder of a world in rebellion against God. And now the disciples have found that their friend, the man Jesus, is able to quell the chaos as only God can. So when the Lord Jesus is with them, they really should have nothing to fear. That's what he tells them. And remember, that's what he tells us too. So the disciples are awestruck. The storm is stilled. And now, with that little problem out of the way, the crossing continues. It's likely that they spend the night in the boat, because the story that follows clearly takes place in daylight. Let's see what happens when Jesus arrives and disembarks. Verse 1, they went across the lake to the region of the Gerasenes. You may know there's a bit of a confusion about the place names here, as you can see from the footnote in the Bible. There's no doubt that Mark originally wrote Gerasenes, probably referring to a village by the lakeshore. The main town of the area was called Gadara, and that was about 6 miles away inland. So to call the area the region of the Gadarenes would be equally accurate, as Matthew and Luke do, or Matthew does. In any case, we're now on the east side of the lake, and that's the Gentile side, and that's important. And as Jesus gets out of the boat, without warning, there appears this terrifying spectacle. A man dressed in rags, at best. Scarred and bloody, where he's been cutting at himself in his despair. And he lives among the tombs, the place of the dead. How appropriate is that? Underground caves where the dead were buried. The only place he can live because the locals have driven him away. They try to restrain him with chains and shackles, but to no avail. From somewhere he has the strength to tear them off. At night and by day they hear his howling cries echoing in the hills or down by the tombs. Can you imagine what it's like to live near that? This is not a man you want around. A man taken over by evil spirits. This is the neighbor from hell. He's uncontrollable, unmanageable, utterly without hope. Even by the standards of demonic activity, this is an extreme case. A man whose life is the very picture of chaos. And now here he comes, running straight towards us. Whatever is he going to do? Let's read what happens next from verse 6. When he saw Jesus from a distance, he ran and fell on his knees in front of him. He shouted at the top of his voice, "What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? Swear to God that you won't torture me." For Jesus had said to him, "Come out of this man, you evil spirit." Then Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" "My name is Legion," he replied, "for we are many." And he begged Jesus again and again not to send them out of the area. As he reaches Jesus, he falls down before him. The word usually means worship. Whatever is about to happen, the demons who control this man are forced to recognize they are in the presence of someone totally superior. A shout is wrung out of him. He addresses Jesus as Son of the Most High God. That's a Gentile expression, not a Jewish one. But as we've seen before, it shows that the demons recognize Jesus far more clearly than any human does. They know who they are dealing with. And that is why they respond to him with paralyzed terror, recognizing in him a power that's not just infinitely greater than their own, but the complete opposite as well. Because Jesus is Lord. Jesus is Lord over the powers of chaos and evil. Back in chapter 3, the Jewish teachers accused Jesus of working by the power of Satan. These demons would hardly agree. And now, as Jesus commands the spirit to come out, the man is forced to confess that there is not one spirit there, but a whole army of them. No wonder his life has been so totally devastated. You can see in these verses how his identity has been almost completely submerged. My name is Legion, for we are many. He begged Jesus not to send them away. Who is actually speaking? Once this man had a real name, long ago. Now he's just Legion. A legion contained 6,000 men. That needn't be taken as a precise count. Would you expect accuracy from demons? But it will soon become clear that it's not far from the truth. Nearby there's a herd of pigs. Remember, this is Gentile country. And soon the demons are pleading to be allowed to transfer to the pigs. Jesus lets them go. They leave the man at once. And moments later there are 2,000 pigs hurtling down the steep hillside to drown in the lake. It's a vivid scene. But a strange one. Many people have wondered why it happens this way. Why does Jesus let the demons destroy the pigs? Why doesn't he simply banish the demons as he does at other times? Doesn't Jesus care about animals? Is it something to do with pigs being unclean for Jews? Good questions. Let's try and answer some of them. I'm sure it's nothing to do with pigs being unclean. Jesus has very little interest in the Jewish food laws, as we'll see when we get to chapter 7. And he certainly won't have the destruction of Gentiles' pigs on his agenda. No, there are two reasons why Jesus lets this happen. One, it's not yet time for the powers of evil to be destroyed. It's not yet the time. Defeated, yes. Driven out, yes. But in God's master plan, Satan and his forces still remain at large for a little longer, until Christ comes for a second time and will destroy all his enemies. So the demons are allowed to continue their destructive work, but no longer will they ruin the life of this man. In God's sight, one man is worth far more than 2,000 pigs. Second reason, Jesus wants to give everyone a dramatic visual demonstration of the reality and strength of these demonic powers so that people can be in no possible doubt what has happened here. This is what the man has been freed from. Not one, but an army of evil spirits. And see what they are like. What a demonstration. They were intent on destroying the man just as they have now destroyed a whole herd of animals. This is what demons are. They are chaos monsters. Just see what happens when they get to work. This is what they do. So the pigs are gone. And not surprisingly, their owners, or the swineherds, are powerfully impressed. Those tending the pigs ran off and reported this in the town and countryside, and the people went out to see what had happened. When they came to Jesus, they saw the man who had been possessed by the legion of demons sitting there, dressed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. It's a sensation. Here is the man who has terrorized their district, made their lives a misery. He's been wandering, raging, rampaging through the countryside, but now he's peacefully sitting down. He's been running around naked or near enough. Now, somehow, he's properly dressed. He's been deranged by the demons, maddened, suicidal. Here, he's in his right mind. He's restored. What has happened here? Surely the locals will be delighted. Surely they'll be thankful. But no, they are afraid. This is all too much for them to cope with. And when they hear what has happened to their pigs and put that into the equation, there is only one outcome. They plead with Jesus to leave. Of course, the man who's been healed feels differently. Verse 18, as Jesus was getting into the boat, the man who had been demon-possessed begged to go with him. Jesus did not let him, but said, "Go home to your family and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you." So the man went away and began to tell in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him. And all the people were amazed. Today, troublesome neighbours are given an ASBO, or a restraining order, to keep them away from home. But this man's restored. He can go home. It's not his first choice. Interesting. Four times in this story, Jesus is begged for something. Four times the same Greek word is used. Twice, it's the demons. "Don't send us out of the area." And he agrees. "Send us into the pigs." And he agrees. The locals beg him to leave. And he agrees. The healed demoniac begs to go with him. And he refuses. This man is now a disciple. He's part of the new kingdom. And he has to go where the king sends him. He's sent back home as a missionary. And it won't be an easy task. Jesus won't ever be back this way in person. That's probably why this man is treated differently from others whom Jesus healed. Generally, he tells them to keep quiet. But this man he tells to speak. This is Gentile country. Now they will have the chance to hear from one of their own people. So he goes and does just what he's been told. Right through the Decapolis region, which stretches down to the east of the Jordan River, telling what wonderful things the Lord Jesus has done for him. And the people are amazed. Do you see what Jesus has done here? And do you notice how similar this story is to the one before about the stilling of the storm? Both stories start with chaos. The howling of the winds, the howling of the demoniac, and ends with peace. Both times the Lord Jesus simply speaks a few words and violent disorder becomes calm. And both times people respond with fear. Greater fear after the miracle than they felt before when they were actually in danger. And the message is just the same too. This man, Jesus, this ordinary looking man, holds the power that only God has. And the same one who can restore peace to a storm-ridden lake can also restore peace to a demonized life. That's wonderful. But it's frightening too. So how do we fit into this story? Where are you in this picture? Apart from Jesus, there are really three characters or groups in this story, not counting the disciples who don't really feature this time. There are the locals, there is the man as he was before, and there is the man after, a different character. And you and I are like one of them. But which one? Are you like the locals? They knew they had a problem, you see. It was a problem they couldn't do anything about, couldn't control. They knew they could not get peace. Then one day Jesus turned up with the answer to their problem. He proved his power by restoring the demoniac to sanity and health. But instead of welcoming him with open arms, they wanted him gone. They drove him away, much as they'd driven their troublesome neighbour away. Why? Because they were afraid. It was just too scary to have Jesus in town. When it really came down to it, they would rather have had their pigs.
than had Jesus around. Is that like you? Perhaps you have seen what Jesus can do in someone else's life. Someone you know, someone who's told you all about it. Someone you can see is living a life that is different and clean. A life you would rather like to have. It looks good, but it's disturbing too. It's just too scary to let Jesus into your life. Look what might happen. He might start taking control of your money. He might start telling you where you've got to go. You're right, that's exactly what he will do. It's too risky. So let's just ask him to leave. But the really fearful thing is, if you ask him often enough to leave you alone, he will. And then you really will have a problem. Are you like the locals, looking at Jesus and saying, no thanks? Maybe you are more like Legion before he meets Jesus. You know your life is a shambles, chaotic, torn apart, not necessarily by demons, but by terrors, or by addiction, or by pornography, by something you know has got you completely in its grip. A force you're powerless to overcome has got hold of you, and you know it. Not many people are willing to admit to that openly. But millions are in this place. And inwardly they know it. Is that you? At night, you may not be haunting the countryside like Legion, tortured by demonic forces. But just what does go on in your head late at night? In front of a computer screen, or in your bedroom, or out on the town. The answer is to let Jesus step in and restore you. He can do that if you will hand your life over to him to control. He is the king. Let him be king of you. He has the power, he has the right to take charge. If he could restore the ultimate, utter disorder that reigns in Legion's life, he will certainly restore you if you will let him in. Or are you like the man as he is at the end of the story? Many of us are. He has a lot in common with us if we're following Jesus. He's a Gentile, and so are we. He's experienced the power of God in his life in a wonderful way, and so have we. And he is qualified to go out and proclaim the news about Jesus wherever Jesus tells him to go, and so are we. Maybe that's the bit that makes you uncomfortable. Well, look again at this man as he ends up. He wants to be with Jesus. He begs to go with him. He goes where he is sent. It's tough for him, really tough, and yet he goes, grateful for what's happened, sharing what Jesus has done for him. First he goes to his own family and tells them. Then he travels, and wherever he goes, he tells people what he knows about Jesus so that they are amazed. Actually, he doesn't know much. This guy has no theology degree. He's never heard a sermon, never attended a Bible study, but he knows who Jesus is. He's experienced his saving work. He's experienced God's power in his life, and he knows what it means to have his life restored. And that's enough for this man to have a ministry. Do you think you don't know enough? It's enough for him to go out and tell. That's what people do when they've met Jesus. Friday, the day before yesterday, I visited my parents, and while I was there, Dad got an email from someone I used to know in the youth group years ago in their church where I grew up. Anne was an ordinary girl doing A-levels when I knew her, and we were 17, 18 in the youth group. We'd been out of touch for many years. But God got hold of Anne's life. She served him in southern Sudan for years until she had to leave. And now she's in Chad on the border where the Sudanese refugees are flooding in from Darfur, pursued by the militia. The other day, their base was raided by one of the militias. Everything was looted and the missionary team are having to pull out. Anne's message simply said, there's nothing much left, but someone needs to stay and look after the base, and I think that had better be me. I have no intention of killing myself or of letting anyone else kill me, but I gave my promise to the Sudanese that I would do my very best for them. She's there because of the love of Jesus. Just the girl I knew in the youth group. She's there to tell them what the Lord has done for her. Because that's what people do when they've really met Jesus. So what about you? You may feel you don't know much, but you know a lot more than this man did. You know where Jesus' story was leading to. You know about the cross where he died in your place. You know what salvation means. And you have a story to tell. So are you ready to go? Go and tell how much Jesus has done for you. First go home, then go wherever he sends. Because what Jesus has done for you is not less than what he did for Legion. Perhaps this story has come alive for you this morning. And you thought, wow, Jesus did something amazing. The transformation in that man's life. Yes, he did. And he's done just as much for you and me. Do you know that? Legion wore his cuts and scars on the outside, but your life was just as broken and torn on the inside until Jesus restored you. What is Jesus doing in your life? What is he asking of you? And if you don't know him yet, do you see what's on offer? Your broken life restored, the pieces back together again, with the Lord Jesus in control.